This is a production of Cornell University.
Hello everyone, welcome. I'd like to go ahead and get started. So the first thing on the agenda is our workshop.
Physical sciences, Mary and Daisy, here. Della, here. Cody,
here.
Nathan,
here.
Professional school academy,
here.
Matt,
here.
Heidi,
she's here. Let's just look at that.
Okay. Matt, you?
Here.
Allison,
here.
Nathan,
here.
Amanda, Alicia.
Arnold's here, by the way.
Michael?
Yeah.
Megan? Yes. Megan S? Here. Jeremy?
Here.
Mila? Here. Catherine? Everett?
I am here. The voice didn't already give it away.
Thank you very much, Ashton. Next, we're going to go ahead and move on to our next portion, which is approval of the minutes. So first, we'll start off with the minutes from January 27th. Are there any amendments that you would like to make to the minutes?
Okay. If not, I just want a motion to approve.
Okay, there's been a motion to approve the minutes from January 27th. There's been a second, okay. Is there any dissent to approve the minutes as they are? Seeing none, okay. Minutes from January 27th have been approved. Now for the minutes of February 10th, I would like to make a point of clarification. In our last meeting, these minutes calculated the number of votes for our divestment resolution. However, it's not changed the outcome of the voting. We at the time had 26 voting members, 20 total, and the vote should have been 17-0-9. So I'm saying that for the record, and that has been clarified in the minutes. So we don't need to make any amendments there, but I'm pointing that out for the record. That the vote for the divestment resolution was 17-0-9, and that's still that. Okay, any more amendments to minutes from February 10th? Is there any dissent to approving the minutes as well? Seeing none, okay. Is there a motion to approve the minutes?
Motion to approve.
There's been a motion to approve the minutes from February 10th. Is there a second? There's been a second, okay. And there is no dissent. So the minutes from February 10th pass. Okay, finally, next, we have our presentations, and we have Isabel Wu, who is Head of Public Relations, Collaboration, and Education at Annabelle's Grocery. And she has a presentation for us. So Isabel is talking to the video. Okay, so if you could please come down with your team, and you will hear a little bit more about Annabelle's Grocery.
Hi everybody, we're here with Annabelle's Grocery to do the program providing fresh and affordable food for all students. My name is Isabel Liu. Just a little bit about me. I'm an undergraduate nutrition type major. I'm a senior and I'm also studying anthropology studies. I do a lot of the education collaboration and education collaboration and PR. I'm a public facilitator PR committee and do some design work as well.
Hi, I'm Lily. I'm also an undergrad studying design and technology studies and feminist gender and sexuality studies. I'm also a part of the PR collaboration and education team and have been for the past 4 semesters.
Hi, I'm a plant sciences senior undergraduate. I am also a co-facilitator of the same committee and I'm very passionate and excited about it.
Hi everybody, my name is Jacob Loder. I'm a junior studying environmental and sustainability sciences, and I'm a part of the purchasing community working with local farmers and distributors in the area to bring products to our store.
So Isabel is going to start us off with this presentation.
Yeah, just like a little bit of history behind our store. A few years ago, a few undergraduate students were really noticing that their friends were talking about just like having a meal, like important or like financial constraints. And they realized that it was actually like a bigger problem, that it wasn't just like a few students that this was happening to, like an actual like campus-wide issue, and nobody was really talking about it or addressing it. So they actually got a few questions in the book survey, a survey that they conduct for every single student, professional undergraduate and graduate. And they found out that 28% of all students at Cornell are considered food insecure, and staggeringly, it's much higher in African American than Hispanic students. And this really got to this idea that Cornell campus is really underprioritized. We're like, we really don't have access to healthy and affordable food, especially if you don't have a car. I think like a bus to like my home is like 90-minute round trip, and it's pretty terrible. And so what is animal going for a long time? What is the need that we're trying to serve? So food insecurity is a much larger issue that what's all food stores can't possibly fix on its own. So we're not trying to like solve food insecurity. Cornell also has like a food pantry now open that is helping, but we are trying to be part of that conversation. We're mainly just trying to provide fresh, healthy, and affordable food for students for that pulled into our subsidy fund and like our product range that we do that with. We want to connect the campus to local users. We find that as a disconnect between the amazing amount of like farmers and bread makers and all these like food producers in Ithaca, but like on the big scale, we're not really connected to those. So we want to have a kind of dialogue with that. And then we want to also have a conversation around sustainability and also food justice. We feel that like a lot of the conversation around like food security and like these kind of higher power like food system costs aren't really needed together. We want to kind of like facilitate a community that talks about all of that.
So we're currently working with a subsidy fund of $45,000, half of which was contributed by you guys, the Graduate and Professional Student Assembly, and half of which was contributed by the Undergraduate Student Assembly. And what this subsidy fund allows us to do is market our products at Wegmans prices or under in order to break down that barrier to students, that price barrier. It also allows us to bring products that students otherwise would have difficulty finding in, say, Wegmans or on campus. We reach out to local farmers and source local produce and other food options that promote health, affordability, and sustainability. And part of this subsidy fund is also through our purchasing decisions, we hope to support local farmers and distributors and the local economy. Yeah, so a few of the farmers that we work with include Stick and Stone Farm, which is right here in Ithaca. We work with Remembrance Farm in Trumansburg. We're working with Headwater Food Hub, which is based near Lake Ontario in the northern part of the state. And they work with a bunch of local farms all throughout New York and the region. So their product mix shifts southward as winter progresses. So right now we're sourcing some of our produce from areas like Jersey, Pennsylvania. Yeah, that's just a snapshot of the suppliers that we're working with. And then part of our strategy in providing affordable prices to students is a bulk model. So whether it be bulk grains, spinach, salad mix, or bulk peanut butter, tahini, miso, or our bulk station, which has a bunch of nuts, grains, and also spices, we're looking to lower costs and reduce our cost of goods sold so that we can appropriate that subsidy fund as effectively as possible and minimize as many costs as possible. And through this bulk purchasing model, we're also promoting whole foods as opposed to heavily processed foods that come in smaller units that are prepackaged.
Well, I'm not going to spend too much time on the slide, but really this is just showing some of the metrics that we have collected during our time, like at the end of last semester, actually. So this is basically telling us what people knew before they were shopping at Animals and engaging on our different events and what happened afterwards. And generally, you can see the trends that people actually have, in a lot of ways, learned more. So there is less of a barrier in terms of like cooking and our cooking equipment and all the different things that we've been doing, our different events and workshops and things of that nature, which hopefully we'll talk about.
Oh, quick question, clarification. Mm-hmm. How many people were surveyed? Because I don't see that number of how many people were surveyed.
So pre-survey was about 550, and then post-survey was about 200.
Okay.
Just to make things more easier, we'll wait for the comments after.
Sorry, that was just a question of clarification. That's what it is. Sorry.
Okay, so one way that we fulfill our mission is through our programming, which includes workshops, cooking classes, community dinners, etc. And pretty much the way our model is set up is that you can, like any given organization on campus, can sort of request a cooking class or community dinner or some sort of workshop that might pertain to their group specifically, which, you know, just like helps us make sure that we're reaching as many people as possible. So these are just some numbers about some of the programming we did last semester, and one of the main reasons we're here is to see how we can like best serve you guys and what kind of programming you guys want to see, because that's, you know, how we're able to come up with events and cooking classes and things like that. Some examples are we did a pumpkin pie cooking class last semester. We did a bulk bag workshop with Cornell Thrift, so that you could take fabric, create a bulk bag, use it in our bulk section, and you would use essentially zero waste shopping that way. And we also do pots and pans giveaways several times throughout the semester to make sure that when our customers use the store, they're able to use what they buy.
Yeah, so we're going to wrap it up a little bit so we can answer your questions and get your feedback. But just to let you guys know, we have a website. We also have a membership, which is free to all students, undergrad, graduate, and professional. So if you want to go to our website now, you can look at that. We also have a Facebook and Instagram. You can follow us there like see what we have each week. And then our store hours. So we're looking at Animals for the Hall, which is right next to the law school. And our hours are 3 to 7 p.m. every Wednesday through Friday. So now we just want to kind of open up the conversation of like how we can better serve graduate students, because actually from our membership survey, about 26% of our customers are graduate professional students, but But we do feel that like some of our programming, some of our product might not appeal directly to the conferences, and we really don't know much about like what you guys need from like a store or like food access or that kind of thing. So yeah, it's just not looking at that.
So do we have any questions or comments or feedback that we'd like to get down on the minute and comment?
Yes.
Oh, sorry. So one question I have is, in terms of your staff, how does that work? Are you paid positions, and also is there, are there any specifically graduate or professional students on your staff?
Yeah. Okay, so I guess the short answer is no, none of us are paid. Essentially, to be a part of Annabelle's, you have to take class AIM 3385, which you get free credits for, and it's like your practicum hours are working in the store, and then after that you can either apply for an independent site or just do it, you know, for fun, I guess. But it is open to grad students. Last semester we had two on our team, but yeah, this is definitely an area where we're lacking, which is why we're really open to seeing if maybe we can work with our course director to try to change that to be, make it more accessible.
Yeah, can you go back to your slide early on that was discussing earlier? Yeah, thank you. So, and I was just curious, since it had mentioned undergraduate students, and sorry, it's going to be an undergrad student-centric question, but was there any attempt to find or survey graduate professional students and issues of food affordability as well, because well, that's not, I mean, certainly a population you might have missed, or are these numbers inclusive of both undergraduate and graduate students?
I think, I'm not specifically sure, but I do think the full survey is given out to both undergraduate and graduate and professional students, so that number would include graduate and professional students. In terms of like the initial undergraduate students who founded Annabelle's Grocery, I'm not sure if they specifically included graduate and professional students when they were thinking about it. But in terms of affordability, our mission has always tried to be make it as affordable as possible, make our prices at or below the cost of like things you find out by then. So I don't know if that
mostly yes then.
Also, to add on to that, if you know of a way that is great for us to reach graduate and professional students to ask them these questions about whether it is actually affordable to them, we would absolutely love to know. My question is going to be a little bit different. I know that we do tax and plans donation. I want to know how do you source those, because I'm going to graduate in a year and I'm just going to.
Yeah, that's a great question. We actually we applied for and got a grant from the Finger Lakes Reuse, which is a secondhand store here. They have one location right here. So we got about $300 of a grant from them, and we've been using that for something. But we also realized we got that grant like right after, like a month after fall started, so we realized we kind of missed like the whole donation thing. But we would love to like crowdsource that and like get donations maybe at the end of the semester, and then we can pass that on to the next like year. So, yeah, I love that idea.
Jeff.
Yeah. Here's my presentation. I was really curious about the hours because it seems like it's going to be Is that because of the staffing, or is that accessibility to the space? Are you going to expand that in terms of more
hours? Yeah, so we used to be open 6 hours a day for 6 days a week, and it just was not sustainable. That was part of the reason we didn't talk about this, but we did take a break first semester last spring. And part of the reason was like the operation logistics The main reason was basically the limitation of that. And we have had students say that they want not like maybe one day and like the weekend and maybe some like longer hours. We're trying to work with that. And like they don't need that, but yeah.
Sure. Do you envision that having a people next to that member, at least one, but how long that
possible? I can speak to that a little bit.
Yeah, we have had talks about having a full-time staff member. I'm currently the TA for the course, but I've found that I can't really devote my resources as a student to looking over the store as a whole because long story short, I was one of the only returning members on the purchasing committee and working with 10 to 20 suppliers and onboarding a whole new cohort of students. That takes a lot. So it's definitely something that our course administrator or Professor Uncle Wessels takes a role in right now. Her office is right down the hall and she's constantly in the store and helping to oversee operations, but that's definitely something that we're open to and thinking about.
I just go from there looking at it. The total up is 11% of grads in the
Yeah, that's a great question.
So basically our relationship with the food pantry is not really existent, and it hasn't been of like a lack of our trying. I guess Cornell Dining themselves don't really want us as partners. And I don't really want
Yeah, so the food pantry is run by Cornell Dining. I don't know if you're meeting, but I'm meeting the call with President Lombardi about looking at the current food landscape at Cornell, and really I think we see ourselves as addressing different needs. They have a very different sourcing model in terms of who their suppliers are and the kinds of foods that they're offering to students, as well as they don't really tackle education at all. So several years ago we were considering working with them, but we don't really have them. It's like entirely student run essentially.
Did you have a question?
So when you actually purchase food from the local farms, are you purchasing retail, wholesale? And is there any interest for purchasing, say, like bales from bakeries or secondhand farms?
Sorry, could you repeat the last part of your question?
Is there an interest for utilizing like bales, something secondhand farms that we prove? Just that you stretch your budget as much as possible.
Yeah. Sorry, I forgot the first part of your question, but I'll answer the second part right now. So part of the helpfulness in having a three-day model, only open 3 days a week, we really minimize the amount of produce that's left standing at the end of the week. So we have a very low waste stream. And whatever is left at the end of the week, we utilize in our community dinners. So we'll host dinners that are open to our members and also open to the public for people to come join us and eat a meal that's prepared by Anvil students. And we also have a second choice basket within our store that's marked 20% off so that we can help sell that produce as a produce. You repeat the first part?
Yeah, but it's more just about whether or not these farms are you retail or wholesale.
Yeah, so we work with farms and distributors on a wholesale basis. So we're getting those cheaper prices. That's kind of where we get our bulk products to. We work with Regional Access, which is a large distributor in Ithaca, and a handful of other smaller farms and distributors as well.
I had coffee next.
I'm going to try to make sure there are two quick questions. One, I know you mentioned about 26% of our membership is graduate students, but I wonder if you had a breakdown in your programming, if you see what percent of graduate students are you seeing in that. And I'll ask some questions too. I know you kind of, through the products you're mentioning, you seem to be aiming for a culturally diverse pantry, and can you talk about that?
Yeah, you were asking how, like, the percentage in our programming?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's something we haven't actually captured yet. We've just been taking like attendance at our programming, and we haven't gotten like demographic information from that. But I think that would be really interesting to look at, and also to like think about what kind of programming could we offer for like a different diverse of students. So yeah, that's something we should look into. And then what was the other?
Product.
Yeah, so that's something we're definitely interested in, and definitely it's one of our missions. And it, I think it has been a little bit more difficult just because like the amount of products we have to buy, and like the amount of the number of students that like fit the demographic and like eat different food. But we do try to like find things that are like more diverse, like we have good things.
I can speak to that a little bit more.
So a diverse cultural offering is definitely on our minds whenever we're buying produce. And one thing, we definitely have a ways to go, but we've incorporated plantains and jalapenos into our store this semester along with other goods. But one thing that we're actively doing is conducting surveys within our store to see what customers demand. Because of course, we have all of our ideas, but I think the best way to learn what we can offer is going to our customers themselves and see what they have to say. And just this past week, we had a whiteboard in the store. Students were asking for basmati rice. So just today, I ordered basmati rice. So if you guys go to the store, now buy basmati rice.
Just to add on to that, because we're looking at demographics of people that are in our store and that we're not always catering to that same demographic, we're also looking within our like their PR education club committee and actually going to different organizations that are really socially minded. So like BSC, for example, we're going to go to them. We're going to sit down with them and meet with these people and ask, you know, like what is the best way of contacting and actually meeting where you're at instead of assuming that you all have to come to us and tell us what you want and actually making sure that we're getting those ideas and preferences and making sure that's reflected in the things that we.
We'll go Karina and then Joel.
My question was more around how and why the teachers like me said we're putting in here, mostly because for me personally, whiteness is not where I go shopping because I don't actually find it very important.
Yeah, we feel like what whiteness is the most horrible. But when we did like initial focus groups and surveys, asking people where they do shop, the overwhelming majority was pregnant. So we felt that that was like a good like baseline. But we do realize that a lot of the coworkers are not that expensive, but a lot of the bulk and staple items in their store are actually like. Well below white prices, and like say our bulk oats are like I think are like under 90 cents a pound, whereas like I think bulk oats are like $1. So we do try to keep it like relatively like low.
We also like our pricing model is like a little bit more complex than that. So for some things like we have like all of our milks priced at the same price point. So dairy and non-dairy milks, even though if you went to Wegmans or probably any other grocery store, that milk would be significantly more expensive, but like we want to, you know, make sure that that barrier isn't, you know, deterring people from choosing like a more sustainable option, or at least trying it out. So yeah, we take some products and like really look closely at like how we can remove the barrier. But again, like, it's constantly something that we're playing with. So
I think the point that you raise is really really strong, and I'll definitely bring that to the purchasing committee and definitely have discussions on that. I think that's definitely something that we should look at going forward, the point of improvement.
I just want to add something to that. I know that Legends is one of the best places to work in the United States, and their workers are happy, and their managers are great, and people get promoted and stuff. So I think that that is one reason why it can be a good baseline, because, you know, everything is how it's supposed to be, and it is a little bit more expensive, but at least you can see what, that's why I'm recommending. And I wanted to give a suggestion to maybe involving grad students for you. I know that River Farm right now has a sustainability effort, and they hired a sustainability representative who sends little things in River Farm news to all grad students every week, basically. And I think that Panabon's grocery, if you communicate with them, maybe it is there because you offer stock food.
Can you say the name?
Given that some of the concerns that you had in your survey were food being expensive and that produce spoils too quickly, I'm curious why you're purchasing organic food.
So I think our mission isn't just about food insecurity, it's also about supporting a whole socially just food system. And when we think about that, we also have to think about the workers behind food. We don't actually think about mostly the agricultural practices in this country, undocumented workers who are getting paid well below minimum wage. So by getting organic and by getting produce from remember where their workers are being treated well and fairly, we feel like that's kind of a cost benefit that we have to wrestle with. Yeah, but definitely it does get sometimes the prices are high, we subsidize a lot,
Yeah, and just going off of that, for example, if we're selling some sort of root vegetable, a turnip or carrot from Stick and Zone, we bring that price down to whatever the cheapest carrot at Redmond would be. So even though ours is sort of from a small scale farmer, we know all the farmers, we're embedding our values in sort of the pricing of that as well.
And also accompanying that is education on how to make sure that your vegetables are staying longer and keeping longer, and how to use them so that they're not spoiling before you even get a chance to actually use them.
And we'll go with Victoria and last question.
Firstly, thank you. I think that I was in food insecurity undergrad before I got here, and I was able to have this. So I just had a clarification question. What is the exact statement of your mission? Because just listening to other questions, I was curious, is it just to provide food to as many students as possible? Is it a trade-off between, healthy, quality food, which I can see why you would program women's, or is it to sort of, get more people involved in the process? I was just curious what your priority was.
I think first and foremost, our biggest mission is providing healthy, affordable food to all Cornell students. And with that, we have some flexibility in pricing and where we can source. And we're definitely trying to address sustainability concerns and waste concerns along with that. But first and foremost is making food accessible to all Cornell students and healthy food at the
Yeah, I would also say that, not just that, but also, supporting the social justice system, getting at, supporting, the producers, the building workers, but also like educating students on why they should care about it. So yeah, doing that was
also like something that isn't necessarily explicit in our mission, but something that we really care about, and something that was really important to me and Annabelle, was creating like a community around food. I feel like continuously on campus, as it becomes more and more grab and go, there's like missing that very human like contact, like cooking together and having a meal. And that's something that, you know, is lost because eating is kind of something you just have to do. It's an inconvenience to get out of your way so you can be more productive on campus. And so that's like another like underlying value we have, which is why all of our community dinners are like completely free and made from like all of our food, and it's our staff with anyone from the community, and we're just like having conversations about these kinds of things and getting to talk to people while we eat. So
So given that your business model involves finding one, which might be better if you had a higher volume, like maybe better things, but also that you're subsidizing food, for students who aren't experiencing food insecurity, would you recommend them shopping at Annabelle's to support you, or not shopping at Annabelle's to let the subsidized food go?
We're definitely supporting everyone shopping at Annabelle's because we're really here to again address food security and make it accessible, but really it's access to everyone. So supporting us is always good.
And there is no harm when other students shop at our store. We subsidize our food and we have a subsidy fund for a reason, and we're looking to use that subsidy fund and replace it over time so that students have access to healthy, affordable food, local food, regardless of their socioeconomic status and where they lie, what their condition is, their status is. So yes, we are losing money overall, but that's the purpose of the subsidy fund and why it exists. And we're looking to utilize it in the best way possible.
It's also why our model is very dynamic. So whenever something is not working, we definitely will adjust it. So if we ever find it that it's way too expensive, we'll find a way.
I've noticed that you've talked a lot about like using healthy food and really pushing that, but I'm curious how like health at every size and like eating disorder awareness are playing into this whole process.
If you want to start with the lamps thing, I don't know if you want to talk about that at all.
I think like more
about it. Yeah, okay. So actually, one of the things that we're doing is partnering with Body Positive Cornell, which actually I'm on the e-board of. So a part of that is having those types of conversations. And during our community dinner, we're actually going to have a facilitated conversation around food and that relationship to it. And also making sure that whatever we're talking about, we're not saying that any food is bad, and really just eliminating that kind of language of morality around food, and really just talking about whatever makes your body feel good, which is actually where we have a campaign this entire month on food that makes our body feel good. So you're on social media. But also getting feedback from people and telling them the things that they want, and not ever vilifying or demonizing a certain particular food, and just letting people know this is the impact of it, and educating people about that, and never again going towards this is a bad food, don't eat it, this is wrong.
Yeah, also going on that point, so we do like small like little nutrition education cards, and sometimes we'll like highlight vegetables on the better newsletter, and we'll talk about like why it's good to use like vitamin D, like the phytochemicals that are in it. But we'll never talk about like calories, and like we don't have like nutrition labels on like our recipes at all. Like that honestly is completely irrelevant, like how it makes you feel and how it really applies to your health. Yes. So our hours are just the academic year, just based on the limitations of the student volunteers. We are actually in the process of fundraising to come in 2 weeks. And with that, we're hoping to get some funds to support maybe two or three students over the summer who might want to delve deeper into animals and maybe looking to learn our operations or logistics and opening during the break of the option. Because, yeah, I was actually over here last summer over the break, and food industry was an issue, and like more like asking all the different food and like is there any food around or like yeah, like food pantry. And so we definitely didn't see that as a need and something that we're unfortunately we can't.
Yeah, I guess the start part of it. I feel like people can hear me. You can hear me, right? You can hear me, yeah. Okay. So partly we do have a whole guide on food safety and handling and processing, and we also have like a license to handle food.
Yeah, we're held to all the standard food safety regulations that any other comparable organization or business would be held to.
I don't know if there's a follow-up question for it, but that's basically what we're following all the time.
Yeah, so with purchasing, we're very conscious of how much we order in order to reduce waste. So produce, we'll typically order just enough to get us through the week or order a little bit more of produce items that can last into the next week. With bulk items, that's the majority of what is left standing in the store for a longer amount of time. So bulk rice, nuts, whatever it may be, we have special Tupperware bins that when have extra that isn't in the bulk station, we have them stowed away so that insects and things like that can't get to them. They're kept saved. And
thank you very much. We really appreciate it.
Thank you all.
If we do have savings that we brought for us, if you guys want them, we'll do them. Just as a quick reminder, it is important that you utilize Annabelle's grocery because the GPSA does contribute $20,000. And let's get our money away. Thank you guys so much. So now we'll go on to the next part of the agenda, which is division breakout. So Alexa, we're going to
So if you are a new member or anyone who likes a refresher, we want to have you recognize for the folks over the basic operations of the GPSA, what we do, small things like where you can sit, etc.
Okay. In terms of where you'll be breaking out into divisions, I'm going to take the professional students down here in the center. The social sciences will be over here with Michael. The humanities will be with Paul to the left of me. Life sciences will be with Leah over here in the middle, and physical sciences will be outside. So.
It is the Alex Green.
Question.
Yes.
So our focus is somewhere fatty and overweight. And so we were studying the And last week the audio was like, yeah, and I didn't know if it was a sign.
So when you're talking to
and today I want to make 2 minutes.
She has a sign.
Okay.
So did that mean the
I'll accept that answer.
Hi, Heidi, nice to meet you.
Last year, we were
really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we're really excited.
On the agenda, we have elections. This is going to bring up to see if we have anyone interested in running for either of these positions. We have one interim appropriation chair and two university assembly delegates. So we'll start off with the nomination process for the interim appropriations chair. What does interim mean? In this case, this means that you will be the appropriations chair all the way until. And then we will elect a full appropriations chair for the next academic year. Then it's now in the main. So now I will take on nominations. So,
Mr. President, before you do, may I ask a question?
Yes, ma'am.
Why are we electing an interim chair? If the person lasts until the end of the year, why not just elect the new appropriation chair? Why even throw the interim?
So in case anyone is interested that will be graduating and still wants to serve, that way they're not another committee for the whole term.
That's an all term until the end of the calendar school year, right?
Which is, I think this is,
so the thing is ultimately our charter says that we're supposed to serve for 1 year, even if an individual doesn't really. So to sort of compensate for that and also the lack of interest, we decided to at least try to fill a role first. And if that is an individual who can stay a whole year, that would be excellent. However, if someone who's still interested in serving, but graduates or maybe studying abroad, they'd also have the opportunity to serve.
Yes. Any other questions before we start nomination? Yes, there we go.
This is just sort of a very general question that I've asked different things. Your ideas about making some very administrative or heavy decisions like aid positions.
Right.
And I know that some other universities have. What's sort of the general feeling around that music now and is that something that you're really doing? Because it seems like there's a sort of
doing these as a big time, so it's not that people necessarily want the money, but it's like, oh, it might be good to take out so that I can work more time online. Right, that's an excellent question. Some of our peer institutions may not, some of them do have paid positions for our counterparts, but some of our peers. And others offer like incentives, like you get priority at housing, which wouldn't be a big call. But house, that's not something that we need for the.
Yeah, I would say that anything along those lines, if you suddenly wanted to vote, that's a little careful.
That's my follow up question. Is there a source of money that could be used to do that?
Exactly.
We should have an appropriation chair to see if that's not.
No, I just wanted to point out on the compensation issue, and you all know that I've done the circuit of universities, that several, including University of Washington, where I finished undergrad, they are called GPSS, the 5 years, the 5 major leaders, the 2 vice presidents, so on. They receive compensation equivalent to a TA or RA position for whatever their unit is. So if they're a law student, they get full tuition coverage as well as a stipend equivalent to whatever is normally paid to graduate research or teaching assistants for their division of school. So that's not just a UW, but that happened, but just
an
example, I
know that. So that's another example of how that goes. I have Casey.
Yeah, so I don't exactly know the rules, so I could be wrong about this, but I'm pretty sure in our appointments or in the university policy, if your research assistant working outside of that for paid work, you can't do more than 8 hours
right.
Or something like that. So if you did make a paid position, that person would be able to work more than 8 hours a week. So that's just something.
That is true. I had hardly an answer, but do you have an answer to that?
I do.
Just wondering if we get back to the business at hand.
Yeah. Okay, we'll go ahead and do that. If you have any more questions, come talk to us after, because we are going to make that agenda. Yes, so now I will accept nominations for interim appropriations chair. And then is there anyone who would like to nominate or anyone who would like to say anything about it?
Just, I have a question of what are the expected hours of the appropriations here? Like, what is the workload?
So the workload is now a lot less since we finished the pipeline funding. So I would say maybe not even 5 hours. Probably less than 5 hours.
5 hours a week or 5 hours a
week? Probably so. This involves like signing off papers.
Yeah, just really quickly. So you're taking care of finance within the GPSA. So it's not like the finance chair takes care of money outside the GPSA. So that's like two over to the club, bigger barn, brown theater. But this is only internal. So it's less partners that you're working with. And then also because we pass a bottom line funding, we sort of already have templates for all the money that's been allocated. It'd be substantially less if you were running the fall.
Any nominations?
No, this is more for my clarification. I guess for people, so just say no, if you're a field rep or if you're representing a club, you can still run for it.
Yeah, no, absolutely. This position is open to anyone in the PSA. We'll also have, I'll help you if you need help. Even though our charter does say it's recommended that there's some reading experience on the committee, but that is not necessary. And although it does recommend that for other positions, just from the nature of turnover, we're pretty confident.
Everybody, do you have a nomination?
Yeah, I was gonna throw my own hat in line just in case nobody else could.
So we have Everett, two teams.
Yep.
Okay, we have Everett. Everett, do you accept the nomination?
By all means, because I'm a masochist who loves student government, so please do.
Okay. Any other nominations for appropriations chair? Okay. Everett, would you like to come stand in?
Oh, well. Or you can... Nah, well, I'll stand. Okay. Good form is good form. Okay. Sorry, I didn't get a limelight there. Okay. Hi, y'all. For those who don't know this voice, I am Everett. I am an MN student here. I also have an addiction to student government that's lasted me 4 universities. What's most relevant is in undergrad, I was on what was known as the Student Technology B Committee, and which I ran, which is the university-wide committee there. I was also on two university committees at the University of Virginia, both the tuition and fees committees, and yes, they were technically separate, even though the same students served up their money. Point being, I is semi-decent with the money. I'm also, I'd like to think I'm worthy of your vote. If you feel that I am unable to serve or serve well, then please vote no. But I hope you find me worthy of your vote. And if you have any questions, comments, or concerns, or feel that I can, or in any way that I can represent you or your interest, please find me. I'm usually not too hard to find, even though I'm an engineer and I know the jokes about us exist. Anyway.
So now I'd like to open up for questions. Are there any questions? Okay, then no questions for Everett, thank you very much. You may now begin the process of voting. Just a reminder, you can do...
I need to go outside.
Alexis passing out a piece of paper, you can write Everett's name, or you can write no comment. While we do that, I'd like to move on to accept any nominations for University Assembly delegates. Yes, Victoria.
So I would like to nominate Alex.
Can you spell that?
Yeah. So Alex and then J-I-N hyphen T-A-K.
J-I-N hyphen T-I.
T-A-E-K. Yep.
Okay.
And then
Tom. Okay. Alex is at a meeting right now, at a council meeting. He's a law student. But he did want to be nominated. He was also endorsed by the incumbent university governor. Are there any other nominations? These are two positions, by the way. So we have room for one more.
What are the responsibilities and also the
time? Okay, perfect. Right behind you is the University Assembly Vice President for Operations.
Hi, so I'm Jeff. I'm one of the UA delegates along with Logan, who's not here. So these two positions are available in terms of representation on the University Assembly. So for those of you who don't know, it is a shared reference to our campus, which brings people in the situation of graduate students, undergrad faculty, and staff. So we work alongside all these different groups to create policies that we put forward to the university, whether it's to your president's office or a consortium with these members of the assembly. So for example, last time we had a meeting, we discussed that investment. That was an approach that the university company wanted to hire your campus and assembly. And so what we do all there as a representative is both on campus-wide issues as a representative for campus students. And in addition to that, we also have some vacancies and committees in which you have the opportunity to work on some of these issues on campus. So for example, right now we are working on things like divestment, nominating the campus code of conduct, or things like that. So if you have any additional questions, let me know. I'll be here to help you with anything. Maybe once a month. It's usually Tuesdays from 4:30 to 6 in the physical science building. Committees are usually bi-weekly, if you join those as well. It's fairly minimal. We try to keep it more minimal this year.
Any other nominations or questions about this? Okay, I don't see anyone. So right now our own delegation. Yes, Cody. Okay. So Cody, would you like to tell us a little bit about your interest?
Yeah. Hi, I'm Cody. I'm a third year physics PhD student, and my primary interest in this position is making sure that it gets filled. So that somebody is representing us in some way, or, you know, that two people are representing us in some way. I've been in the GPSA since my first year, and right now I'm the chair of the Faculty Awards Committee, which you'll hear about more later, and that's really all I have to say.
Thank you. Are there any questions for Cody? Yes, Jeff.
What are some things that you think you want to do on this kind of commissioning?
Well, since it didn't occur to me to really participate in this until I need to find out more about the opportunity.
And we would talk to Jeff about this.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you very much, Cody. So these are your options for University Assembly delegates and appropriate. Any questions? While we get that sorted, I'd like to go on to the next part of the agenda, which is new business. And this is the introduction to Resolution 8, a resolution to adopt the Graduate and Professional Community Initiative. Yes. That is correct. Thank you for the clarification. Yes. So we have two positions that need to be filled for University Assembly, and these are your uncontested
Any questions? Thank you, Dola, for that. Okay, so we'll go on to new business, a resolution to adopt the Graduate Professional Community Initiative. And the sponsor of this is currently County Dallas. Yes. Yeah, Alex, you would like to.
Okay. So, I'm sure you've heard this from me like ad nauseum for the past 2 years, but we're finally in a position to vote on a resolution to accept the 2020 Graduate Professional Community Initiative. Basically, what this is it's this 5-year strategic plan for graduate professional students that we've been working on for the past 2 years. It has 8 topic areas, which includes everything from family services to diversity and inclusion. It's attached to the meeting packet and it's also attached to the agenda. It's a 40-page long document, so I don't want to go through it completely, but basically each topic area outlines needs that the graduate professional community has, and beyond this, we plan on sending this to relevant university administration so that they can take it in mind when they are coming up with the university strategic plan. So in this resolution, I have outlined the relevant stakeholders for this. So it's all here at the bottom, very long list. But I've included the president, Martha Pollack, as well as the chair of the Board of Trustees, as well as all of the deans of the graduate school and the deans of the Law, Vet, and Johnson schools, and the deans of every college at the university, so that would include Cal, Arts and Sciences, etc. We also have relevant vice provost and the provost Michael Kalikoff involved in this, and some representatives at Cornell Tech, because they are also technically a part of the GPSA, as well as people outside of Cornell and within the larger Ithaca community, including the general manager of the GCAD, because we do have a transportation section. So my goal right now with the GPCI is not to pass this at our next meeting, but instead I'm going to give another 2-week absolutely final comment period. And by that, I mean, this is your last chance to say what you want to say about the GPCI. I will be, again, advertising this wherever I can advertise it. And if you have any suggestions on where I should add this information, please let me know. But once March 16th rolls around, we're done. Like, that's it. No more commenting. It's been 2 years. I'd really like to get this passed by April 6th. So that we can finish out the school year strongly and finally get this really important document off the ground. So, questions? Yes.
I remember last semester you were talking about how you didn't get enough comments. Mm-hmm. I was wondering if after our report efforts in last semester, are you happy with the number of comments you received?
Yeah. Yeah, I'm very happy with how it has gone. So we held a joint town hall with the SAC committee, so student advocacy committee. And then we also developed a Google form that was a lot more intuitive for people to reach and get their comments on. So I'm a lot happier we were able to, I think, reach a broader audience. We've also got some more listening tours, so a big one that we did was the
the Graduate and Professional Student Diversity Council. So I think that we've been able to get more feedback as we want.
I mean, it's like the same issue with like people want, you know, free gym memberships and bus passes and definitely.
Yeah.
So, I don't know, like, is there a plan to incorporate any of the comments and how will that happen?
So, our current document is actually a revised document. This is the second draft that has taken comments that we've received over the past year and incorporated them into the section. Obviously, we have to be really realistic with the kind of edits that we made with this document because we want this document to be taken seriously by administration. And we know that if certain acts that are super lofty are put into the document, they may not be taken seriously. But our goal this time around is we're keeping it open for another 2 weeks and then we will have another 2 weeks period after that to incorporate all of those additional comments that we received. And then we'll be sending it to a content editor to make sure that the style is consistent across the board. Yeah.
So I guess
So it would be in 2025. We had obviously some limitations with getting it done in 2018 because it wasn't until I was elected Vice President of Communications that somebody was even willing to chair this committee. There hasn't been a lot of interest in like pulling this together. So we already lost the year because of that, and then we faced further obstacles and receiving. So it would be 5 years from now, 2025, that the next document would hopefully be written.
Yeah. One way to send comments to
I will be sending out a form to the listserv for everyone to send out to their constituencies to garner feedback, and then the loftiness of the goals are determined by the topic area chairs who have met with relevant administration multiple times and have had realistic discussions about what is accomplishable for this document.
I have just a question. Yes, sir. Why is this taking so long to percolate through the process? I'm sorry, I didn't mean to be. This is an informative question since I haven't been here 2 years.
All right. So the initial call for starting the GPCI ad hoc committee occurred in 2017, my first year as a grad student. I was not involved in that call at all. It wasn't until the 2018-2019 academic year that I was elected as Vice President of Communications, and previous President Ecarino Lenorto suggested that I chair this committee. And then the reason it's taken so long is actually because certain stakeholders in this have wanted additional feedback from the community, because they felt that it wasn't a community initiative without sufficient response from the community.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions?
Thank you, Alexa. We are just doing the introduction, so we will discuss this at one of our next meetings. So thank you very much. So I am happy to announce that
Everett, congratulations. You are our new interim appropriations chair. Thank you. Cody, congratulations. And Alex, who will get the notification, are our new UAW. So thank you all for voting for your mission. Congratulations. So now we'd like to go on to old business. Now, this is a little bit of an unusual situation because the sponsor of the resolution is not here. So we do have a couple of options. We can discuss the resolution, amend it, change it, and then vote on it like we normally do. We can table it, we can send it to a committee, or if someone is interested in sponsoring and being the point person for representing this today, we can do that. So again, we can discuss it as usual, we can table it, we can send it to a committee or something. So before we move on, is there anyone who would like to motion for any of those? Again, the sponsor is not here.
Yes. I'll motion to discuss because even though Jaron isn't here, I do believe that given the fact that we're still in winter weather season, it might actually be relevant to discuss versus trying to put it.
There's been a motion to discuss the resolution as without Jaron. Is there a second? I don't see a second. So the motion is not passed. Yes. Go on. Okay, there's been a resolution to motion. There's been a resolution. No, there's been a motion to table the resolution to our next meeting.
Yeah, or whenever it's here.
There's been a motion. Is there a second? There's been a second. Is there a dissent? Yes, there. Let's work on the motion that's on the floor.
Okay.
Okay, there's a dissent. Okay, so the motion does not pass. Let's vote yes.
Okay, so she goes to the table. Well, normally what happens is if there's a second, then you discuss whether to table.
So let's back up. So there's been a second to table resolution. Is there a discussion on it? And that's part of it. Sponsor the resolution if we decide to discuss it today. Any other discussion on the resolution on the motion of table in the resolution? Okay. So shall we vote on whether we want to table it or not? So voting members, if you could raise your hand or placard, motion needs to table the resolution. When the meeting is going to vote. Okay, is there any dissent to table in the resolution? Please raise your placard, hand or placard.
Wait, sorry.
Yes, is there any dissent to table in the resolution? Please raise your hand or placard.
One, two, three.
Any abstentions? Okay, it does not pass. I mean, it passes. So it's 14-3-9. So the motion table passes. So we will discuss this at a later meeting.
Okay,
so we will discuss the meeting when it's appropriate. We're not going to promise that next meeting because we're going to have the trustee debate. So, we're excited to come.
So we'll go to the Q&A. So I'll start off with the executive committee. Any other?
The next meeting is on March 16th.
Yes, next meeting March 16th. Operations.
So I actually have a few. I have a few important reminders. So firstly, I just want to let everyone know that these meetings are recorded and they are archived in Cornell's archives. And we also take meeting minutes that transcribe the events that happen. So it is within your best interest to uphold professional forum, not saying anything that you don't want in a national university publication or in your court. So I just thought that's something that I would remind everyone of. Number two, all the fact of the quorum, whenever we have presenters, guests, or even your peers speaking, that we follow Robert's rules, that we don't interrupt people, just because one, it's against our charter and bylaws, and number two, we don't want to project that kind of image to those who come to watch, and also you don't want to, you want to treat people how you want to be treated. So I just say that as a reminder that we want to be respectful of everyone. Number three is that you can sit where you want. So I know there's going to be a little bit of confusion of, you know, everyone with flyers is down here, if I sit down here. But no, anyone can sit anywhere and it's open. I just forgot to have one, you can sit down here. So don't be intimidated by that or the process of Robert's Rule. If you do want to say something, just politely raise your hand and the next opportunity for a speaker's list, we'll put your name on the docket. But if you otherwise have any other questions, please do not hesitate to talk to me. Thank you.
In case you are new here, you can drop me the meeting packets are in the box. So when you get your flyer, you can come here and get that information. Next is appropriations. Okay. Is there an update that came up?
Not yet. Considering I just got elected, but by next meeting, I will hopefully be fully briefed and be able to brief all you up to be. But thank you for those of you who voted for me. Thank you for voting for me. For those who didn't, I will try to earn your trust and confidence all the same.
Thank you very
much.
Ever. Finance.
So the first thing is that there is a new finance meeting website for campus groups. So that's cornell.campusgroups.com/GPSASC. And you can also find it through our page on campus groups. So you can find all of the information up there, such as deadlines, your peer assignments, and some guidelines. And there's going to soon be a quick start guide there as well. So the other thing I have to announce is that the finance committee is meeting this Thursday from 6 to 8 in Warren 137. There's going to be free food. Anybody is welcome to attend. If you want to help review budgets, you should contact me at arj66@cornell.com. We were talking after this meeting because we have to get you set up with admin privileges to do that, but anybody is welcome. And at that meeting, we'll be discussing a quick start guide to campus groups that should hopefully make budgeting and reimbursement of campus groups a lot easier for a lot of people. So if you want to give feedback on that, please comment.
Thank you, everyone. Do we have an update? We don't have an update from student advocacy. Any updates from this?
So our next meeting is on March 12th, 9 a.m., and there'll be every other Thursday at 9 a.m. in Emerson 133. We're planning community conversation for March 11th, and it's going to be on the idea of citizenship, who gets to be a citizen, and how that's changing across the world. But I'll let you guys know the exact details of the time later. GPCI, both Eugene and me have a section on that, so please give comments. And also, if you want to come to the next meeting, March 12th, and discuss your comments in further detail, we would love that as well. And looking forward, we're planning a meeting on April 7th with a lot of other diversity councils coming in. And I know Eugene's mentioned this before, but for any new member out there, if you're on a diversity council in your college or department, or you know off the council, let us know, because we just want to kind of resources and programming and cross.
Awesome. Thank you very much. Next we have programming. No update. Faculty Award.
Yeah.
So I will reiterate my request to get volunteers from anyone that would like to participate. Very soon will be time to, well, in the next couple of weeks, I'm going to be putting out the request for nominations. I had hoped to have some people to discuss the guidelines for the award and the website and terminology and all that stuff, but as of right now, it's just me. So please reach out to me and get involved. I definitely shouldn't be the only one reading the letters and deciding on the award. And yes, so my net ID is CJB259. And sign up as a thank you for my volunteering for the University of South.
Thank you very much. General Committee, we don't have either of our representatives here. Congrats, Jen, you have an update.
I don't have any announcements, but I have any questions.
Oh. Any questions for Jen? And then we have the GPTM.
Yeah, so basically what I said earlier, I'll be sending out a Google form for you to send to your constituents to get feedback on the current draft.
Okay, and the last update, Jeff, do you have any update from the UA?
So in our last University Assembly meeting, as you might recall, while the UPSA voted in favor of investment, we after the UA also voted forcing divestment. I think right now we're waiting on faculty and undergrads.
Yes, sir.
Then the quintuple problem approach. Besides that, actually right now, so the campus goes to the judicial committee of the University Assembly. Right now they're working on updates for the campus code of conduct. They're actually looking for feedback. And if you go on the office website, they have language of specific things they want to modify, such as language about suspension, about definite suspension, some of the administrative stuff regarding judicial administration, and who which office they represent. Those kind of things, they're all kind of being modified with this new change. And we're hoping to get feedback for this before we send it to the board trustees by May. And so if you want, go to the website and give your feedback.
Thank you, that concludes our community Q&A. I am aware of the time, but I'd like to not get open forum. Is there anything that you would like to ask? Yes.
Since our resolution about cash nets didn't do anything, I want to invite everyone here to use your other option of paying your version, such as this is giving the bursar's office at they call a check. And I'm very excited to see if they're still agreeing with that decision after they
thank you very much for that reminder. Any other open forum announcements? Yes, please.
Yeah, so I've just been following the news about the UC Santa Cruz strikers who were striking for a cost of living adjusted, being fired basically from the university. And this strikes me that even though we're not a union, we could at least do some sort of show of solidarity with that. So if anybody is co-sponsoring
a
resolution on that,
please talk to me if I don't mind. So that is not an invitation to Ariel. There are people who have reached out to Ariel and are very interested in doing that.
I have a follow-up
to
that. What is Cornell doing with Rolls office? Because they're not graduate students, they're assistants.
I do know that the campus code of conduct
conduct, there are guidelines. And so when there are guidelines for staging the protest, then I'm assuming it means protests are allowed.
Right, so you can be fired if you're protesting. Call it the language.
Well, but again, we don't use the language of fire.
Right, you lose your position.
Well, I will speak as an academic dean. Students who are not performing up to expectations in a teaching assistantship, policy 1.3, so there's a rule for that. Policy 1.3 gives the guidelines, the kind of feedback you need to get, the timeliness of that feedback, and then the ability, you know, respond to that feedback and bring your performance up to satisfactory level. You can be removed from the classroom.
Policy
1.3.
Yes. So next, I'd like to
ask. Yeah, just real quick. So in the student development education committee, I know so we've been talking about the idea of reinstating the reimbursement for the fitness center, where the previous policy was if you use fitness center like 8 times, and the paperwork you get your membership be back essentially. And I can say that right now on the floor, we're working on into turning the district plan. Two said yes, put it back, including my committee. One said, no, because we don't know how much money it will cost us, but maybe yes, and the other said no. So we're not sure what's going to happen, but it might happen. That's why.
Thank you. Now let's move on to the yes. There's been a motion to adjourn the meeting. Is there
a second?
So, is there a dissent? So, now the meeting is adjourned. Thank you to you guys.
This has been a production of Cornell University. On the web at cornell.edu.